Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you as we've got a very, very busy day. Talk, obviously, about a little golf that happened across the pond and how Colin Morikawa is definitely a guy to be reckoned with. But we also have a space launch that we'll talk about here in just a little bit, too, is Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world, joins another really rich guy, Richard Branson, about a week ago, going up in space. Rich guys want to spend their money somehow, I guess. Why not go up into space? And that's happening as we're doing our podcast right now. So we'll talk a little bit about that and other golf cool things that are happening. Frank Bassett, as always, in our Nashville studios. I'm in Dallas. You're there. And Jeff Bezos is in West Texas. And they just came down, Frank. Were you watching that all? It went up and down all in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's one expensive roller coaster ride right there.
Yeah, real expensive.
Woo, so it landed safely. I didn't see it land. So they're down?
Yeah, they had to come down. Yeah, they're down, and they landed on the right part, if you will. I mean, right side up with some parachutes. And the rocket, the actual, I don't know how tall it is. It looks
booster?
Like it's 100 feet high.
The booster?
The booster actually came right back where it started from. So it went up, you know, with all the flames below it. Went up to
that was really good.
360,000 feet or whatever, and then came back down, and the flames came back on again, and it landed back where it landed on the same pad. That's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Sound effects, by the way, are extra. By the way, this segment brought to you by Arnold Palmer Spiked Tea. While we're talking about having a good time in West Texas,
Yahoo!
The people in West Texas know all about Arnold Palmer Spiked Tea. We'll tell you more about that in just a little bit. So it's all done. It's all over. It's all done.
That's it.
Now,
that's just,
here's
wow,
the thing, though, Frank.
So fast.
I don't know if people realize how quick this happens, because they seriously just go up. At some point, you heard the people in there, and I believe there's four people in there. Bezos' brother, a young Dutch boy, and I say Dutch boy, 18 years old, the youngest guy to ever go in space. He kind of won the lottery, if you will, for the bids. And then an old veteran, not an astronaut, because she's a female, and she's 80 years old or so, and she was before they were allowing women to go up in space, but she was an early pioneer of flight, if you will.
Wally Funk.
For women. Wally Funk is her name. She's a Texas woman.
Yeah.
And she was in
the Mercury program. She was training one of the first women being trained for NASA. Wow, it's pretty cool
exactly.
stuff. So she finally got to go.
Yeah,
they didn't go into outer space, but they were on the very edge of the of space. So
and I don't want to diminish things. We're talking about Blue Origin going up. I don't want to diminish things. It's a pretty cool thing, and I'd love to do it. I would never spend $200,000 for that little 5 minute ride.
I think it was $24 million for the kid, but.
Okay. As far as they're saying down the road they're going to start charging like $200,000, right? Part of this whole program.
Yeah.
Is because it's Richard Branson, it's also Elon Musk are all wanting to do space things, and they want to charge you and me $200,000 for a little space ride.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if it's that kind of a space ride, they seriously are up and down in 5 minutes, and when you get to the peak, you basically go, oh, look around, and we're going back down. I mean, it's that fast. You're weightless for a while. You heard them kind of getting giddy at 100,000 feet, whatever it was, that they were kind of going, oh, this is so cool, because they're weightless, and they took their seatbelts off and everything and went around. They got their seatbelts back on and started to come back down again. Cool. I mean, I'm not saying it's not, but, boy, it happened fast, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It was pretty quick. I heard, I was trying to listen to it, and you know, we're doing this, but I heard Bezos say, Wally, you in? Are you in? Because they probably couldn't get Wally back in the seat. Wally was out looking around going, woo, and partying.
I waited 80 years for this.
83 years old. She said, if I'm going to go, this is the way to go. And everybody else on board's going, we're not ready yet, Wally. Okay.
Yeah.
Not quite of the age. But, yeah, it was cool. I do not want to diminish it. You're absolutely right. It was really bad cool. And I just remember growing up with space flight and how cool it was. And you just wouldn't miss a launch. And in school, they would bring the TV. In the old days, they'd roll it in on the cart, you know, the old CRT, or it was a cathode ray tube, CRT TV, weighed 4,000 pounds, you know, with a 21-inch screen, and show the launches. So, yeah, it was pretty exciting. And I can't wait to hear the post and all that because it, you know, I...
We've come a long way. This certainly is different than, you know, the NASA ones that we're all familiar with, and Mercury and Apollo, where they had to land at sea. Now I get it. They went way up into space and everything else. They're getting to the point now where they're saying, we basically go up and come down the same spot. And I'm thinking that this isn't all they want to do, that they're going to do this and go up there for 10 minutes next time, or 20 minutes, or 30 minutes, or an hour, and go up a little bit higher, but still come back to the same spot, which is really cool about it, and reuse all that stuff. That's what got tough and in a budget sense with NASA and the Pentagon and everything else. You start spending millions and billions of dollars, and it all just ends up exploding and ending up somewhere in somebody's backyard or in an ocean. It makes a lot of sense to reuse this stuff. And maybe you can afford to do the things you're talking about doing if you don't have to waste it all.
It's a different breed of cat, because they got up to, three times the speed of sound, 2.5 times, whatever it was, to get to the point where they were. But to reach outer space, to get into orbit, it takes 17,500 miles per hour to get there. That's a lot bigger rocket, a lot more fuel. Yeah. And then re-entry, to get back in, so you don't bounce off the outer atmosphere. You know, the technology is incredible for re-entry. Yeah. So, you know,
and just so people are aware too, that these companies that are doing this, Blue Origin in this case, or Richard Branson, any of them,
Virgin,
they're using almost all former NASA people. I mean, these are, they're not just going to. Yeah, Bezos didn't just go to Amazon and say, hey, any of you guys know anything? Do any of you take physics? Anybody out there? Okay, well, come on and help me put this rocket up in space. I mean, they went to NASA. These guys know what they're doing and how to do it, which is why now they're showing Bezos. I mean, they've got windows. I mean, they even got big windows that you can look out. And remember the old NASA ones? It's almost like...
Well, the Mercury wasn't going to have one. They remember there was a revolt?
They weren't going to have a window.
They weren't going to have a window.
I know. And when they finally got him, it was like a peephole. It's almost like looking out your hotel room to see if the maid is out in the hallway. Yeah. I'm like, that's your look at space? Is this little window? Yeah. But Bezos has this big picture window like in his living room, and he's leaned back and watching it. So now here's what happens. So they go up that high. You basically see the curvature of the Earth. You see darkness above you, right, which is space. And you are technically in space, because I believe there's a number. It's 54 miles straight up or something like that, which always baffles me, right, Frank? I mean, if you're at your house right now, you might go today to shop somewhere. You might go 54 miles away to go to Home Depot and pick up some stuff for your yard. That's 54 miles horizontally. It's not you don't think about it. You go straight up that same distance, you're in outer space, or at least you're on the edge of outer space. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's not that far, right, when you think about it like that. So you go up there, you see the curvature of the Earth. You see it's dark and everything up there. That's what they got to experience, and you're right. When you actually get into outer space, like the astronauts were doing stuff like that, it's much, much higher up into space than that. But you do see, not unlike the Concorde. Did you ever fly on the Concorde?
I did not. I almost had an opportunity. I mean,
would've been cool.
That close. Oh, yeah, it would have been cool. I know people who have, and they say it's tiny. It's like it's tiny inside.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool.
It didn't hold a lot of people, which was even back then why it was like $2,000 a ticket to go wherever you're going to go. Because it only held, I mean, I'm saying 80 people.
You couldn't get a flight. Like you couldn't get a seat. That was the problem. I was ready to put the cash up because I wanted to go badly, I should say. But no, never could make it happen.
I talked to, you know, somebody who I know who went up in the Concorde.
Art Selinger.
Justin Leonard.
Oh, Justin Leonard did?
Justin Leonard. And when they, because the Ryder Cup team used it to go to Europe for one of the Ryder Cups back in the 90s, right, when they were still flying.
I didn't realize that. I'd forgotten about
that.
And
they used the Concorde as like their charter to get over there. And he
really?
Talked about how the Concorde got to 80,000 feet, maybe. Am I right on that, you think, Frank?
Yeah, somewhere up there. It's high.
It got a lot higher than you and I or everybody else flies in commercial flights now. But you did also see darkness. You got to see some curvature. And he said that they were putting balls like down the aisle. Down the aisle, like Freddie Couples got out with a ball and a putter to putt down, because they're going, what, are you going Mach 3 or something? I mean, so you're not only going higher, you're going much faster than you normally would go in a regular jet. And they're trying to test, in a funny golf way, trying to test Einstein's theory of relativity. If you're going at 1,000, 1,500 miles an hour and you putt a ball, does the ball actually go much faster than if you're on? So they're trying to do their own little experiments, but he said it was really cool to be able to look up and you see darkness up above you, which would be pretty darn cool.
I see darkness a lot when I'm in the woods hunting for my golf ball, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A little different, a little different. Anyway, so, this is Golf Talk America, and we are not NASA radio, but this was pretty cool to watch this morning. So
Pretty neat event.
Yeah, it was.
Event.
We were going to start the show earlier, and we said, no, we got to watch this.
So yeah, we wanted to watch it. So we're sharing it with you. So now you, if you didn't get to see it, now you got an idea of what Bezos did. Now, let's talk a little golf. We're coming off of a great weekend at Royal St. George's. And Colin Morikawa, congratulations to him. The 149th should have been 150th, but we had a pause for a year. 149th Open champion. I'm not a big fan of them, and I say them as in the British Open people, also getting to say he's the champion golfer of the year. It's like they're dictating to me too much authority over the world of golf. Like, why is the British Open champion the champion golfer of the year?
Well,
US Open champions, because, pretty prestigious too.
Because it's the R&A.
Because they felt like...
And it started like over there. The title on there. And it's their game. And
they took British off.
And
they, right?
Well,
which
no. Yeah, but in his acceptance speech, Colin Morikawa called it the British Open. And I was looking at at the captain of the R&A, and his face kind of went, huh?
Well, it's that's
well,
what
other,
it's
you
like,
know, it's a U.S. Open, it's the Canadian Open, the French Open, the Italian Open. You know,
everybody's got an Open. That's my point. Australian Open. Yeah. Everybody's got an Open, but the British are like, no. We invented the Open, so we're just
the Open Championship.
It's a snobbiness thing that I'm not crazy about.
They're not snobby over there.
They get to call him the champion golfer. Well, it's not a bigger champion than the Masters.
Do you know why they talk like this too? Because the food's so freaking bad. They're going,
it just came out like that. So anyway, regardless, Morikawa is the Open champion. And Jordan Spieth put on a run, put on a tournament, put on an effort that normally would be good enough to win an Open championship. And he knows that. He played well enough. He had two holes on Saturday. So just for people that realize that it doesn't always come down to Sunday, because Sunday was pretty much dead even with him and Morikawa. He gave him a two-shot lead, if you will, going into Sunday. And that two-shot lead haunted him because he couldn't distinguish it. They both shot 66s on the final day. They both played very well, made putts, did all the things they could do. But Spieth on 17 and 18 on Saturday had potential birdie opportunities after very good drives on both those holes. Ends up with bogeys on both those holes. So it could have been a four-shot swing. It certainly was a two-shot. Maybe one birdie in there. It would have been a three-shot swing for Spieth. And he knew it. You could tell when it was a bitter pill for him when he was done going, man, I can't believe I'm two shots back. And I know exactly where those two shots could have come from.
I thought it was a little telling in his interview if you watched it. And we get the feed, of course, over here, for the actual feed from the media center. And Spieth said, how old is he? I don't know. Was he 21? What? I don't know. 24. Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
Spieth.
Yeah, Spieth's asking about Morikawa. Kind of like, oh, how old is he? Well, I don't know. What? 24. You could tell Spieth was a little put back by what happened. But one of the funniest things that happened, Tim, was I was listening to a lot of the interviews and watching them. And when Shane Lowry was interviewed, and I can't remember Paul someone, and I can't hear the last name, from the media, asked Shane, said, well, so since you haven't been playing as well as you normally play, haven't been playing as good or well or whatever, however he said it to Shane, and he asked him a question, said, what do you think about this, this, or this? And Shane said, what do you mean I haven't been playing well? I think I've been playing pretty good. Who told you that? Crickets.
Yeah, really?
They went to the next media person for the question. He didn't say another word. Shane's a big boy, and it was funny because I thought he was just going to get up and go slap the crap out of him for saying that. Yeah. So
Morikawa deserves – here's some other accolades that go his way. He joins just a handful of guys, including Sarazen, Tiger, Spieth, Rory, Bobby Jones, to win two majors before he's 25 years old. Yeah. Only a handful of guys have ever done that. He's the first ever to win two majors in his first attempt at those majors. If you remember last year when he won the PGA Championship at Harding Park, first time he'd ever played a PGA Championship, he wins it. This is his first ever. It's only his second time playing links golf because he played in the Scottish Open, as a lot of these guys did, as a warm-up.
And
the
finished
before.
Last, yeah.
First time he'd ever played that. Like, oh, this is a different kind of golf. How do you play? The bump and runs, all these things. He goes over to Royal St. George's and just chews it up. And finishes with a phenomenal score. So only guy to ever do that with the first time at the British Open, first time at a PGA Championship. So he's a force to be reckoned with, right?
He shot
around it. And I'm not saying that like people don't realize that, but I think for sure he's a guy. I'm glad he's an American because he's a Ryder Cupper, a President's Cupper, we think, for the next 20 years. What a great young player and a lot of chutzpah. I mean, I'm telling you.
Yeah, he does.
I don't think I've ever said chutzpah on the radio before.
That's
there's chutzpah.
Good. Chutzpah. Hey, yeah, you know what was interesting? I think he should have taken the almost $2 million that he won and gone to a pub and put it all down on darts. Because that's basically the way his iron play looked on Sunday. He was shooting darts all day. Yep. And when he got in trouble twice, only twice. And both times he recovered. Both times he played smart shots and recovered. That par putt that he made, I thought, oh, here's the bogey, here's a swing. Okay, drains it with authority. You never saw him drop a putt with its last breath. It was always confidence online. He misses a couple of those. It might have taken him down a different path, but he didn't.
And he had a couple. You're referencing a couple of short putts. I think one on 15 near the end there. The other one maybe on 12, 10, 12, 11, somewhere
13,
in there.
13, 12, something. I forgot.
He missed two greens, and he put it in the hay, right? So he missed by 20 yards. Now, the hay there, we all know, is kind of wispy, right? It's not thick, thick stuff. But still, it was over his ankles. The ball was down. And those are, in both shots, he hit within about 10, 12 feet. And then, as you said, made the putts that he had to make. Well, the shots themselves would have had me gasping for air, right? Just being in that situation and knowing I've got to hit this right just to get it within 10 feet. That's what I was hoping for. He hit perfect shots. It's as close as he could get. But a lot of, we've seen it, a lot of guys clear the, go all the way, Luis Hazen, into the other bunker on the other side. They leave it in the hay because they try to get too cute, and it comes back to their feet. He didn't do that. He hit two nice shots when he needed to and really have a sense of confidence on those wedge shots. He hit two great ones. So, yeah, those are, I think, Spieth, and I said this to a friend of mine I was talking to, Spieth needed Morikawa to back up because I didn't think Spieth was going to be able to catch him with birdies, birdies, birdies while Morikawa might make pars. I thought Spieth was going to play about where he played and as well as he could play. He needed Morikawa to have one of those moments and get a bogey, double bogey on a hole that he's in a bunker, has to go backwards kind of thing. Never happened. If it would have, it might have been a different ball game. I would have loved to see a playoff. That would have been really cool between those two. But Morikawa did not blink one time.
Not once.
And I think we should have known that, Frank. If you go back to, I believe it was 16 at Harding Park at the PGA Championship, was it not the par four that he drove the green and made eagle?
Yes.
That pretty much sealed his deal at the PGA. That, again, was a tremendous clutch shot that people don't, I think, give him enough credit for. It was like, it was a short par four, but he still hit it 380 or whatever he hit it, and 370, and put it within 15 feet. I mean, it was just a perfect shot that could have had a lot of trouble written all over it if you don't hit a good shot there, because a lot of guys were just laying up or hitting irons. He went for it, and he's shown a lot of grit. That's for darn sure.
He doesn't show, and we'll talk about this in later shows down the road, but he doesn't show any scar tissue yet. And I don't mean to be negative because I really enjoy watching him play golf. But there's no real scar tissue there. And, you know, his mental coach and his college coach did say about him that when he did have, you know, letdowns, disappointments, whatever, he just said, okay, these are the three things I did wrong here, here, and here, and this is what I'm going to do to fix them. So that
he
eliminates scar tissue because that's just putting a tourniquet on it immediately. So he stops the bleeding. He understands where the cut was and how to fix the cut. Cut meaning the laceration on his forehead or arm or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And he repairs it in his mind very quickly. That's mental toughness.
Because he does not have the same makeup as like a Jon Rahm. Even a Spieth, who shows a lot of emotion.
Yeah, no.
Rahm shows an awful lot of emotion. Morikawa, kind of like DJ, but he's different, you know, different personality. But you don't know if he just made a birdie or a bogey. I mean, he just kind of has the same feel about it. So even if things weren't going exactly Morikawa's way, you just saw him talking to his caddy, almost like, okay, well, here we're gonna have to hit one out of the rough on this shot. He just dealt with it. Whatever came about, he dealt with it. And at his age, with his lack of experience, this is only his eighth major. As you're saying, the scar tissue wasn't there. He didn't seem to get rattled by it. And again, I kind of kept thinking, being a fan of Spieth, and if I was Spieth, I'm like, no. He might come backwards. He might. I mean, this pressure is going to get to him. It didn't. You kind of thought it might because that's a British Open. It's links. And as you know, those guys, here's the frustration of links golf to me, Frank, is you hit those perfect drives down the middle of a fairway. you don't know where you're going to end up. You hope you end up in the fairway, but yeah. You could rip one, and the guy bends over right away and gets a tee, and everybody's, oh, that's good. And then as the cameras pan and you go down, he ends up in the hay.
Or the bunker. Because
the thing rolls 60,
one of those
60 yards to the left and goes right from the middle of the fairway into the rough. And you're like, that was – American courses probably to a fault are almost concave in the sense of the edges on the outside, right and left of the fairway – are higher, and they kind of sometimes funnel down so that if you do hit a fairway, it'll almost always stay fairway, right? It'll almost come back to the middle. These are almost opposite, right? They're as our favorite designer now, Frank.
Donald who?
Donald Ross fairways, like a Donald Ross green. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you hit it in the middle, and it just is destined to go left or right, and you just hope it stops before it gets to the really thick stuff. So that's a frustration. And again, Morikawa, not knowing all that, I thought, well, maybe he'll do something like that, or it will roll into one of those bunkers when he pulls out his driver and it goes farther than he thinks it's going to. Never did. Yeah. I mean, it was – he split some fairways with some bunkers on either side, and you're like, well, I don't know if you knew those were down there or not, but you somehow got it right in the middle of them, because you get in those fairway bunkers with the 8-foot wall in front of you, and you're not going forward out of there. So
all this talk's made me thirsty.
Congratulations to Colin Morikawa.
No kidding. Very nice. No kidding.
Majors are over. Majors are done. We're going to take a break. Before we do, we want to remind you that if you're thirsty, like Frank is right there,
the
Palmer Spiked Tea is the perfect beverage for you. It's the combination of classic iced tea and lemonade with a little bit of alcohol, 5% by volume. So you get a little bit of a spike in the Arnold Palmer Spike. It's a great, great beverage for any time of the year, any activity that you're involved in, whether you're out there boating, playing a little bit of golf, or just hanging on your patio with some friends. Arnold Palmer Spike Tea is the go-to drink to have. It, of course, has the legendary golfer himself. And I remember watching on Saturday Night Live when they were doing a skit, and they had Arnold Palmer on there, and he was pouring himself his own. It's like, how many of us have our own brand, our own name on a famous drink? Well, Arnie does, and this is amazing stuff. It's perfect balance of the teas and the fruit juices. 5% alcohol by volume. It comes in multi-packs or a tall 24-ounce can, perfect for sipping all day long. If you want to find out where a store near you carries this, go to arnoldpalmerspiked.com/GTA, arnoldpalmerspiked.com/GTA, and you can find out exactly where you can go buy this, or, of course, go to your handy alcohol app, Drizzly, and Instacart will have it as well. So, again, arnoldpalmerspiked.com/GTA, or go to Drizzly or Instacart to find your very own Arnold Palmer Spiked. Frank?
2021 Hornell Brewing Company, Memphis, Tennessee. Malt beverage with natural flavor. Celebrate responsibly. Ta-da. That was my
part. We're going to take a quick time out. There you go.
And
we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about, we are done with the majors, but we still have Olympics coming up. We still have Ryder Cup coming up. Oh, by the way, FedEx Cup playoffs, Tour Championship. There's a lot of golf to be played, and it has been a wonderful year so far. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. You're listening to Golf Talk America, and we shall return right after this.
Hey, it's John Ashton from Those Weekend Golf Guys, and I was talking to Frank just the other day about daily fantasy sports, and I said, Frank, do you play? And he went, well, I used to, but I'd never win. I said, well, that doesn't surprise me. 85% of people who play daily fantasy sports lose. The game's rigged against you. You're playing against thousands of other lineups and experts with a lot more tools and a lot more time than you have, so you don't stand a chance, Frank. And then I told them about Stat Hero. It is the first ever daily fantasy sports book that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works, okay? Stat Hero will show you their lineup, and then they dare you to beat them. You see, it's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup. You name your stakes, and it's winner-take-all. You have the advantage. Try it yourself. Go to stathero.com/golftalk. Sign up for free, and right now you can get 3 times back on your first play. They're giving you a 300% match, and that's unheard of. stathero.com/golftalk. This is a game even Frank could win.
And welcome back to Golf Talk America to Matthews and Frank Bassett. We're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up here and on the PGA Tour schedule. But first, want to make sure that you're aware that if you get a little bit run down like we all do, and the older you get, kind of harder to recover. So much harder to recover.
Are you talking about me?
All thinking we were, yeah, I'm kind of talking about you too. And me too. And a lot of people out there. True Niagen is a supplement that fuels your body, gives you energy, helps maintain your cellular metabolism, even supports heart health. True Niagen is something that you take and you're going to feel better a lot quicker. And as you get older, as I said, it's kind of just a tougher thing to recover, whether it's around a golf, which sometimes can really wear you out, especially in the hot summer days, or anything else that you're doing, working in the yard. You can kind of get run down a little bit, but it's clinically proven to boost NAD levels, an essential coenzyme required for cellular energy and repair. Now, that sounds a little complicated, but it basically is telling you it gets into your body. It works at a cellular level to help you recover. And your first purchase is going to get a little bonus to it. You go to TrueNiagen.com/golf. That's True Niagen, which is TrueNiagen.com/golf. Save 10% on your first purchase of True Niagen. So TrueNiagen.com/golf, which tells you basically that the people there that you got it from us. And we helped get you to True Niagen and helped you feel better and your friends and everybody else feel better. And you get 10% off for doing it. So check them out, TrueNiagen.com. It will help you make you feel a lot better, a lot quicker, and be able to get out and play golf again tomorrow like we did in French Lick. We did in
Pinehurst.
Frank, yep. Last few weeks, we played a lot of golf.
At Giants Ridge.
You do get tired, don't you?
Last week, I'm worn out.
You do get tired.
I do, and I use True Niagen, and it really, really, really works, folks. So check it out, really.
You're ready to go. You're ready to go.
Now, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But let me tell you, it works. I use it. I love it. So
it works. It's great.
Hey, the 3M, so the 3M's coming up this week, though. I didn't mean to jump on your lead. But
that's right.
The 3M's coming up. The Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis, and looking forward to that. Just got back from Minnesota, Tim. Up at Giants Ridge, played a few days up there. And, you know, Minnesota golf's really cool. It's the land of 10,000 lakes, and everybody jokes that the state bird's the mosquito, but it isn't. It was really, really nice. And I'm looking forward to the 3M because a lot of the big boys who just played in the Open Championship are going to be there. So interesting, interested to hear Louis Oosthuizen's interview from 3M.
Well, you know,
when you
mention scar tissue, you got to think of Louis.
Oh God,
right? Because he's got a lot of it now, and he's gone through. I believe this is his fifth or sixth runner-up in a major.
Yeah, not good.
He's only won one. He won about 10 years ago, or in 2010, he won an Open Championship. So he's got that, which is awesome to have, and it tells you how hard it is to get those. Because here's a guy that he had the lead, seems like, every day, and I think he did.
He did.
At this Open Championship. He has a swing that's almost too perfect. It's Iron Byron, right? It's a machine.
It really is.
And you're like, well, how is that ever going to go astray? And yet, the nerves become what they become, and the history, and the, oh, my God, and you're thinking the head, which is, you know, Bobby Jones, Jack Nicklaus, you know, the biggest muscle in your golf swing is the 6 inches between your ears.
That's it.
It's so true. You can have all the perfection you want, but if your nerves aren't quite there and that perfect swing misses by a few centimeters, as we know, boom, you're suddenly in a bunker. You're suddenly here. You don't hit out of the bunker the right way, and Louis kind of faded. He had a good tournament, a very good tournament, but
obviously
didn't win.
You never see Louis Oosthuizen ever. I've never seen him fin it out of a bunker like he did. I mean, he just flew the entire green and to the other side. Yeah. It just, wow, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And that had to be a mental error because his swing is, as you said, it's beautiful. It's perfect. It looks like the Ping Man or Iron Byron or whatever you want to call it, the machine
It was Spieth at number 12 at the Masters 5 years ago, right? I mean, how do you hit balls in the water like you do there, too? So it wasn't. That stuff normally doesn't happen, but again, and I'm doing this to compliment Morikawa, the pressure gets you. It's not that I don't have this shot. They got all those shots. They can hit everything, except when you think, oh, my God, this is 149 years. They've been playing this. Did you see it during the broadcast, or did you hear during the broadcast, one of the announcers said, and I think this might have been on PGA Tour Radio, because I think they used nothing but British. I didn't hear an American voice on PGA Tour Radio for this Open, so I think they tapped into British radio. Seriously, it was all.
Yeah, if you listen to the Golf Channel, you very seldom hear an American voice there, too. Sorry.
It was all Irish and Scottish and English. And I mean, that's all the announcers were. I needed the bottom of the screen?
At the bottom of the screen? The closed caption?
I need closed captioning to understand some of these really strong brogues that some of these guys had. But the point is that one of them said that the first British Open champion won the year that Abraham Lincoln was in office as president. That tells you how far back we go. First, same year as the British Open champion, Abraham Lincoln was his first year in office. So, yeah, that could get in your head, right? It could be like, wow, this is really meaningful. And it might have, certainly for Oosthuizen, it didn't for Morikawa. So, to his credit.
South Africa.
Now, Frank, moving on, we've got, as I said, we've got BMW Championship, Tour Championship, Northern Trust. You know, so we've got the playoffs coming
3M
up.
We've got Ryder Cup. Yeah.
3M this week. A few other tournaments before that, you know, in between here and there. We got St. Jude's, right? One of your favorite. You might be going there. Are you going to go to St. Jude's?
Well, you know, it's up in the air. It's up in the air because they're having an issue with the COVID-19 Delta variant in Memphis. Yeah. So I probably am going to play it safe and just not do it, even though we've all been vaccinated.
So you're saying up in the air for you?
Yeah, it's up in the air. They're going to have the tournament. And they're going to have spectators or fans or patrons or whatever you want to call them there. But as far as the media is concerned, and you know the close proximity in the media center where you are, especially in Memphis. Yeah. You've not been to the Memphis Media Center, but I will tell you that it's tight. It's actually right there in the clubhouse, and it's really small and tight. And I just, my better judgment tells me that it probably would be smarter to cover it from afar. Or if I go to Memphis, don't go to the media center, and just, you know, I kind of go out on the course a few days. But I'm just not sure yet. I'm going to flip a coin on that one and consult my my financial advisor.
That's the St. Jude, which, by the way, you know, all these tournaments, we talk about this all the time, 3M being one, can sometimes fall into the category of another tournament, right? It's not a major, and it's not one that everybody has to play in or whatever. Here's the difference, too, though. And St. Jude's done a great job, and FedEx certainly done a great job, of enticing players. First place money at St. Jude's is $1.8 million.
Yeah,
first place.
Well, it's
this
a WGC now. It's a World Golf Championship event. It just became that last year. So, yeah, big money. But FedEx is based in Memphis, and FedEx, you know, hello.
Yeah,
big.
But that's what's going to get the players. That's what it gets. Because the Wyndham Championship the next week is just like the 3M. It's $1.1 million. So that's one. I'm talking about the big boys. You know, are always looking like, well, you know, first place is $1.4 million. Yeah, it's kind of worth going. Even if I get fifth place, I still get $600,000. They see those things, right? They understand the money that's involved in these. So it's a competitive world. I mean, try to get these golf tournaments and get the top players, like you said, Oosthuizen and some others.
Dustin Johnson.
Wanted to take a vacation, but they're in Minnesota getting ready to tee it up and play again. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do. That's how you make your living. So
most golf fans, patrons, spectators are different. But most people know that they're, you know, DJ with TaylorMade or whomever with whomever, with PXG or with Titleist or whatever, they have stipulations within their ambassadors' agreements with these companies to play in a certain number of tournaments. They have stipends that say if you finish in the top 20 or top 10 or top 5 or, you know, if you miss the cut. Yeah. There are all sorts of bonuses and pluses and minuses to these agreements that these guys have. So, although they're independent contractors to the PGA Tour, they are not independent contractors to their sponsors.
Right.
So, you know, they basically are paid ambassadors. So there are certain things they have to do, is my point there. And that was a long-winded way of getting around it. But
hey,
it's not just their choice a lot of times, you know.
Did DeChambeau make up any for backtracking that he did by not only
shooting
a 65? Did he prove anything? Because people were wondering.
How often did he use his driver on Sunday?
I didn't see him play, so I don't know. They didn't show much of him. They didn't use his driver much?
No.
Yeah.
He had his driving iron. And he throttled it back. Guess what happened? My goodness, he shot a 65.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a little round of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, 65 showed that he can play because people were wondering, well, maybe his game's not right for Lynx play. He just has to be, it's hard to say because he's a very smart guy, but he has to be smart enough to know when and when not to use that driver. If you can hit your 3-wood, which he can, over 300 yards, then driver isn't always necessary, especially when you're not sure what happens 360 yards down there with funky rolls into St. George's fairways. Then just play it with the 3-wood.
Last time I checked, Danica Patrick doesn't stand on the accelerator in the curves, okay? So why would you go out there and Lynx golf and stand on the accelerator? Makes zero sense to me at all. You made a great point, and I want to elaborate on that point, which was in Lynx Golf and Colin Morikawa, who won this week, he's not a slash-and-burn style player. okay? And he won. Yeah. He beat the bombers. I mean, he just did.
Yeah.
So are these golf courses obsolete? No, they're not. They're not obsolete.
All right.
So grow the rough up just a little bit more and put those slash and burners, you know, in the rough. And
so DeChambeau probably learned a lesson, and we'll see next year.
Hope his mouth learned a lesson because I'll tell you.
Yep, and, you know, and that way too.
Yeah, you just don't bite the hand that feeds you. You just don't do it. Yep. My driver sucks, and what was his comment? My driver sucks. Well, he should have said my driving sucked because, you know, it was the Indian, not the arrow, and I don't mean that to derogatory toward any ethnicity. I shouldn't have said it that way. But it was him. It wasn't the club and you know what was really neat? I know my mind's racing here on this because I got so fired up about it, Tim. But when one of the engineers from Cobra said, "Well, he's never been happy," I went, "Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
what's that tell you?
Ow."
Yeah.
Well, he said when you start de-lofting it, when you take it from 12 degrees to 10 degrees to 9.5 degrees to 8 to 7 to 6 to 5 degrees. How in the world are you going to manage that? That makes it so much harder to hit and control at that
point. Exactly
right.
Exactly right. Yeah.
So I don't know.
So he kind of, and that's a part of the experiment going on, and he has to understand that. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Cobra would want to re-up. I don't know what their terms are, how many more years he's with them or anything else. I don't know. I think from what I've heard, he makes about $5 million a year from Cobra for playing the clubs. That's serious money for Cobra, and if they're like, well, we can go to somebody else and have not near the headaches. I don't know. Maybe this is all part of the development. He is 28 years old, so I know I've been around athletes forever, Frank, as you know, and I always say there's probably a good 5 to 10 year gap and a lag in their maturity from real people. And when I say that, it sounds critical, and it is because it's true. I've been around enough of them to know that they're for the most part pampered and treated in a different way all the way from junior high all the way through until they become the pros. So when they're 25, they really act like they're probably 18 or 17 a lot of times, as far as their maturity level and what not to say and how to say it and all the they're not told shut up. They're not told discipline is what it's all about. So they get ahead of, and that's Bryson. He's 28. He should know better. You would think 28-year-old man, he's a grown man. But in his mind, he's kind of like still a little bit of a 19-year-old who wants to get his way.
My dad always told me when I throw my little tantrum or toss a club or whatever, he said, number one, don't let your emotions nor your mouth overload you, period. And that's a great little statement to live by. But here's the deal. You said it about Cobra and the money they're paying him, and we don't know what's going to happen with all that. I just want it on the record, Cobra, that Golf Talk America would love to have a conversation with you. Love to have a conversation with Cobra. We'll work for a lot
and we're not
less
talking
than $5 million.
We'll do less than five.
Yeah, 4.2.
We'll do four. We'll do four.
Hey,
we'll
don't leave $200 on the table. Come on, what are you doing?
We'll do anything you want to do. Cobra.
I love Cobra product. I mean, it's really good stuff. Yeah. I've hit their products.
It is great stuff.
It's good stuff.
It's obviously great. He's won majors with it. I mean,
Ricky Fowler does pretty good with it. So. Ricky Fowler's coming back too, and that's a topic for another show. But I'm looking forward to watching Ricky Fowler some more. He's good for the game. He's good for junior golf. He's just a good all-around guy, and I really want to see him come back.
He's one of those guys that transcends golf.
He does.
Because there's the cuteness, and Ricky came in as kind of a pop star when he came on the tour. Remember, he had his long hair and everything. He started being the first guy with the flat build and his cap and all that. Well, he kind of started to transcend golf so that younger people who may not be into golf started going, this Ricky guy looks cool. And look at remember he wore the funky high top shoes and everything else he did. He was a fashion statement. That's neat. I mean, golf doesn't need to be, is it homogeneous? We're all the same. Is that the word I'm looking for?
We don't need to
all be the same cookie cutter out there on the golf course, right? So put a Ricky out there. So it's good to see him coming back. Before we let you go, Frank, and we say goodbye, Olympics. We've got four guys, am I mistaken? We got four guys at the Olympics. Morikawa now probably the lead pony, but also DeChambeau, right? He's an Olympian.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Who else do we have?
I was just reading it last night.
Dustin Johnson has chosen not to play.
Not go.
It's by world rankings, but I think we've got Schauffele, maybe. I think
Xander Schauffele, that's correct.
He's the third.
Yep.
And Morikawa and DeChambeau, and who else is in that top 10?
Going blank. That's terrible.
We got like a Webb Simpson or somebody, don't we? That's a top 10 golfer. I think that might be in there.
No.
Not Patrick Reed.
Not Webb. No.
But I think we have someone who Is it Justin Thomas, maybe? Would Justin Thomas be?
It would be Justin Thomas.
Playing the Olympics?
Gotta be.
There you go.
Gotta
he's
be.
Top 10.
I'm yeah. trying
so
to get
a pretty good chance that we could win a medal. I would hope. I would hope we're winning a medal. It'd be nice to get the gold medal. But anyway, the Olympics start at the end of July. And so the guys will be heading over there that are in the Olympics. Justin Rose, defending gold medalist. What do we got last time? We got Kuchar got a bronze, I believe. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he let me hold his medal. So did Justin Rose. He let me hold his medal, take a picture
cool.
with it. Yeah, it was really cool.
I'm telling you, an Olympic medal would be pretty neat to have, wouldn't it? It'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, you, right. you think? Who is playing you golf think? In the 2021 Olympics is what I'm seeing. And Justin Thomas. That's the one.
It is.
How do we miss Justin Thomas?
I must have said Justin Thomas.
I must have been drinking.
At the end there. Yeah.
Speaking
of
drinking.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Segway.
That was
okay.
good.
If you're talking about, you're talking about Firstly.
I am.
Firstly, Frank, you and I both like wine. You really like, you and your
love
wife
it.
Love your wine, right?
Love it, love it, love
well,
it.
First Leaf is a wine club, right? It
yep,
curates
it
and ships boxes of wines right to your home. And it's a perfect combination of the right wines and the ease of getting it at your front door that makes it just a no-brainer. First Leaf gets you the box that you want. And what happens, Frank, is they send you boxes. You then send a review, if you will. They start to figure out what kind of wines you like, what grapes you like, all the different variances that go into wine. And if you really like your wine, you know that your palate is a little bit different than everybody else's. And so you can't always just get it off the shelf. You can't always ask a guy in the store what he likes is going to be the same as what you like. So this is a way that you can really whittle it down to the exact wines you want. And the selections are tailored to your liking. 98% accuracy is what First Leaf will give you once you've gotten down the road a little bit. And by the way, First Leaf also saves you time and money. Their award-winning wines are delivered to your door 60% off retail. 60% off retail, the price right there. So you don't have to worry about that last-minute run to the store. You've got your wine already ready to go whenever people come over or surprise you when you come over. And there's also a special deal. Frank, did you know about the special deal?
Yes, I've used the special deal, and it's pretty doggone good. But tell them about it.
Yeah. You get six bottles of wine for $29.96. That's six bottles for $29.96. And these are all very good wines. These are not $3 wine that you get at a convenience store when you're on the highway. It's not that. This is very good wine. Six bottles for $29.96 and free shipping. Just go try firstleaf.com/golftalk. Try firstleaf.com/golftalk. And six bottles for $29.95.
There you go.
All ship free to your house.
$95, not $96. It's 95.
Yeah,
let me tell you what. I took the little survey online. It takes about 2 minutes. It's really cool. And it asks you if you like this. Do you like this? Do you like this? Do you like this? Bam. It comes up with these wines. So I ordered the wines, right? $29.95, mm-hmm. free shipping. They came in. These are some nice bottles of wine. And I mean, I like Chardonnay
nice.
For by the pool, whatever. I like Cabernet is our favorite at night. We eat a lot of red meat, which we shouldn't. But here's the deal that they when they send it and it's shipped, it's really cool how they ship it. No damage, no nothing. It's slick. But there's an envelope in there. And you open the envelope, and it has a card that has for every wine that you receive, and it tells you all about the wine, the region it came
right.
from, what are the tannins. It's really, really cool. It'll make you very, very wine smart. It'll make you sound cool if you go out to a restaurant and order a wine. It's fun to learn about
and
the stuff
also,
that you're
it,
drinking.
It,
so First Leaf is fabulous, folks. It really is.
Yeah, it's what helps you whittle down to exactly the type of wines that you want, and then they'll start shipping those to you. Because why experiment? If you get the wines that you like, and you know these are the three different ones, then that's the wine you should always be drinking. You should have at your house. And that's why they can figure it out by the different grapes and everything else. That's what's so great about it. So, again, check
and
them
you
out.
And you can choose. You can choose, too. So, you know, you don't have to go by what they ship you. You can also choose. So, it's a neat, neat, neat wine club. It really is.
Try firstleaf.com/golftalk. And again, your six bottles are just $29.95 and free shipping. You can't beat it.
Yep, you can't.
All right, Frank, we're done. Jeff Bezos is back on Earth. So I guess we're done.
So are we.
That's what that means.
I'm going to play golf.
Yeah,
you want to play today? I'm out of here.
I'm going to go play today.
Going to Club Corp, my club.
Should be fun. Club Corp. Check them out. Clubcorp.com. Find a club near you. You're a member of one. You're a member of over 280 clubs and courses around the country. So check them out at clubcorp.com to find out one near you that you can kind of dip your toe in the water and find out how awesome Club Corp really is. We're done. Thanks so much for joining us. We do appreciate it. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. We appreciate your time, and remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.